Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. My name is Sarah and I'm lucky enough to be here today with the beautiful and amazing Melissa Ambrosini.
Thank you for having me.
Melissa, you have written this book, Mastering Your Mean Girl, which has one of the best subtitles ever, The No BS Guide to Becoming Wildly Wealthy, Fabulously Healthy and Versing with Love. There's a lot of buzz about this book at the moment. Can you tell us a bit about how this book came to be?
Well, I started writing on a blog many years ago, sharing my stories and information and client testimonials and case studies on how to be healthier and happier. And it got to a point where I had so much information out there on my blog that I felt like I needed to hone everything that I'd learned and everything that I was discovering and, you know, using for myself and for my clients into one place. So that's kind of where the first inspiration started and why I wanted to write a book.
And the concept of mastering your mean girl, which is just fabulous. Can you explain to people what the concept is of having a mean girl?
Yes. So the mean girl is that egoic, fear-based voice we all have in our head. And for the dudes, it's the mean guy or the bad boy, whatever resonates with you. But for me, I lived from my mean girl for many, many years. I let her tell me I wasn't good enough, I wasn't smart enough, I wasn't pretty enough, successful enough, rich enough, you know, whatever enough. And we all have that fear-based voice inside our head. Every single person has an ego. And if they tell you that they don't believe them. Run for the hills because they're lying. Because everybody does have that voice inside their head. Now, the thing is that we don't have to live from that voice. We don't have to let that voice run and ruin our life. You were the one in the driver's seat. She is in the back seat and you can have her on mute. You don't have to let her try and, you know, climb over you and steal the steering wheel. You're the one that's in the driver's seat. And I believe that your birthright is to live your best life that's true to you from a place of love, not from your ego. So in the book, I teach women how to master that voice so that they can live from a place of love and live the life that they actually want to live for them.
Well, I mean, one of the things that really blew me away early on in the book, because when you're reading a book like this, there's a lot of, and you say it yourself in the book, that it's common sense. It's something that most people know on some level. Like, yes, you should think positively and you should love yourself. It's like, it's not like news to people. But what is like the value of a book like this and what it does offer people is the tools and the methods that you can use to love yourself and to lead that kind of a life. And the point where, and I'm rambling, but like the point where I was like, okay, this book is going to really teach me something is like early on in the book you say, you know, where's the effect of you don't have to fight your mean girl, you can accept that she's a part of you, and then when she shows up, that's how you know that you get let that guide your behavior.
Yes.
Can you speak a bit about that, because that revolutionized my thinking really, like, yeah. That you don't have to be in battle with yourself all the time.
Exactly. And there's a lot of spiritual and self-help texts that talk about killing the ego and smashing the ego. It's not about that. The ego is part of us. And you can use it as a compass to come back onto your path. And that's how I use it. So when your mean girl pops up, use it to guide you back to your truth. And I have a little simple three-step method to master your mean girl that people can start to do today. I mean, the first step is buying the book and reading the book. But the second thing that you guys can do is, the first thing is becoming aware of what she is telling you. You know, whether it's you're not smart enough to write a book, or who do you think you are, you know, applying for that job, or you're not going to get the raise, or that guy will never like you, whatever your mean girl is telling you, become aware of that dialogue. Because once you are aware of it, it's no longer dark and you can't unknow what you now know. No matter how much you want to, you know, try to unknow it, you can't unknow it. Unless, I always say, unless you have one of those men in black guns, where they're kind of like those zappers that they put in front of your face and they're like, I will erase your memory and zap.
But for those who don't have one.
No. And if you have one, like, let me know. That's cool. But for those, you know, for those people that don't, becoming aware of that dialogue inside your head is key. That's the first step. The second step is gently closing the door on her. So when she comes knocking with those fear-based thoughts, like you're not good enough or he'll never date you, whatever it is, it's about saying thank you, but no thank you. You know, your mean girl is there to protect you. That's what she's trying to do. Although she doesn't really know. She doesn't really know how to live from a place of love because she lives in a constant state of fear and lack. So gently closing the door on her. And then the third step is choosing love instead. So sliding out of your head and back into your heart, which is your truth. You are born into this world as beautiful, whole, precious little beings. And then along our journey, we get told we're not good enough or we're not pretty enough or, you know, we flunked an exam or we lost all of our money or we got divorced or we had our heart broken. And all of these things we carry around with us like bricks in our spiritual backpack. And you get to a point where you realize maybe that's when you read this book that you don't have to carry those things around with you anymore. So awareness is the first step. Gently closing the door on your mean girl. It's not about slamming the door in her face and killing the ego. You know, the ego is a part of us. And then it's about choosing love instead. So that little simple three-step process people can start to do right now.
And what you've done so well with this book is identifying things that everyone is familiar with and breaking them down as you just did then. Another thing that really spoke to me in the book was you mentioned comparisonitis.
Yes.
Which I think everyone is familiar with, that comparing their life and where they are to their friends and feeling those shortcomings. Mm-hmm. How do you recommend dealing with that?
Well, comparisonitis is something that I suffered from for many, many years. And it is your mean girl's way of keeping you stuck in Fear Town. And she will not only compare you to your friends, but to randoms on Instagram and celebrities on Facebook and anyone. She will compare you to the person walking across the street. But the best thing that you can do is use that comparison, like anything with your mean girl, as a compass to come back to your truth, to come back to your path. You know, we can be inspired by other people, but jealousy and envy are very different. Jealousy and envy come from your mean girl. So there's a difference. You will definitely feel different if you are inspired by someone or whether you are envious or jealous. So whenever I feel that envy or jealousy, I tune back into myself and I take myself through that little three-step process. I become aware of what she's saying. I gently close the door on it and then I return back to my truth. So that little three-step process you can do with everything, you know, comparison, any fear-based thought, you can use that process.
And it's just so fascinating that such, to me, that's such an essentially simple idea, because it's simple what you're saying, but it does apply to everything and all the different ways that you illustrated in the book. It's really almost like reprogramming your brain.
So, yes.
I'm not a big reader of self-help books. So for me coming into this, not having read many books like this before and having what I would say is probably a healthy skepticism towards these kind of books and thinking, oh, it's all just, you know, common sense and it's all the same sort of thing. I've been just really blown away by your approach to it, because it's a friendly and warm. You address readers, you know, as though you're your friend, you're their friend, I should say. And I can't stress enough what a pleasure it was to read and how much it's really shaken up my thinking. And I just wondered if there's one, like, simple, the book is full of quotes as well, like inspirational quotes. If there's one, like, line that you wanted people to take away from this book, what would it be? Like one key thought.
In every moment, we can choose love or fear, and it is your birthright to live from that place of love and to choose love. And I think when people realize that, it's so liberating. So I guess my little statement would be choose love over fear.
It's beautiful. Another thing I wanted to discuss was your own journey to writing this book, and you address in the book when you're rock bottom. Can you tell us a bit about that and where this genesis of this book came from?
Yeah, so I hit rock bottom about 5.5, 6 years ago, where I ended up in hospital with a whole host of health issues. Before that, I was a professional dancer at the Moulin Rouge in Paris, and I did a bit of acting and TV presenting, and I loved it. You know, I started dancing from the age of 3, and I loved performing. It really lit me up. You know, dancing on stage, there's nowhere else you can be. It was so freeing for me because it was the most present I ever was. Because you can't be dancing on stage and thinking about what you're going to eat for dinner. You know, you've got to be really present. You've got, you know, lifts, and you've got to be over there, and then you've got to do that move there, and you've got to be singing whilst you're doing cartwheels, you know.
You can't be stressing about the future or dwelling on the past.
You have exactly. To be, yeah. You're just totally in it. And I would just walk off stage feeling so elated and just overwhelmed with joy and happiness. And it wasn't until later I realized why I loved performing so much, and it was because of that feeling. So I hit rock bottom, and I ended up in hospital with chronic fatigue, thyroid problems, depression, and eating disorder. I had loads of vitamin and mineral deficiencies and candida and SIBO and all sorts of health things. It was like a nice little cocktail. But the final straw was I ended up with the cold sore virus. This was the last straw for me, which kind of really pushed my body over the edge and pushed me into hospital. I'd never had a cold sore before in my life, and I had them all over my face, in my mouth, and down my throat. Like, I couldn't even open my mouth. Like, my lips were kind of like stuck together. And as a friend so elegantly put, and I say this in the book, she said to me, it looked like someone had taken a blowtorch to my face. And I was like, thanks, babes. That's
a really great friend.
Yeah, great friend. But before that, about 2 years before that, when I was really depressed and dealing with my eating disorder, I was ignoring all of the warning signs. And I can only notice this now looking back, but I ignored so many warning signs to stop and slow down and kind of get my health and my life on track. I was partying and, you know, not sleeping. I'd sleep 2 or 3 hours a night on sleeping tablets. I was trashing my body with alcohol and drugs and food that was just not healthy for me. I was surrounding myself with toxic relationships, and I was in and out of hospital all the time, and the doctors just saying to me, nothing's wrong with you, nothing's wrong with you. And I was like, clearly something is wrong with me. And it took, you know, a serious outbreak where it attacked my entire immune system for me to really stop and look. And I ended up in hospital, and it was a really pivotal moment for me, because although that was the darkest point in my entire life, there was this tiny, tiny, like the top of a pinhead, tiny glimmer of hope. And it's almost like my body could finally surrender. And I let go. I let go of trying to be who I was trying to be. Like, I just let go of the trying and the struggle. And that doesn't mean it was rainbows and butterflies all from there. It definitely wasn't. But a friend of mine sent me a really amazing, powerful book called Louise Hayes, You Can Heal Your Life in Hospital. And that book was the catalyst for me that really turned everything around. I had no idea what self-help was. I had no idea what self-love was, but all I knew was that I didn't have it. And then I began my journey of self-discovery, of going inward. From there, I read every spiritual text I could get my hands on. I read everything from Deepak Chopra, Eckhart Tolle, Marianne Williamson, Louise Hay, you know, all these beautiful, great teachers that we have access to now. And I totally immersed myself in their teachings and their learnings. I went and studied holistic health and life coaching. I studied acuenergetics, which is energy healing. Yoga teacher training. I became a qualified yoga teacher, meditation teacher, and I just immersed myself in this world. And I started to feel healthier and happier. And I was like, I don't know really why I'm doing this meditation thing, but it's working and it feels good and I'm just gonna keep following it. And 6 years later, it just escalated into what I have now, you know, this beautiful book in our hands here. It's a result of just continuously following what made me feel good. And that was doing the yoga and doing the meditation and starting to nourish my body and getting sleep and doing all these things that we know. That
we do know, but we don't do them.
We don't do them because our mean girl tells us that we don't have time, or that, you know, you've got to look after your 3 kids, but you've got to look after you. Because when you fill yourself up and look after yourself first and foremost, you can then show up to your kids, to your partner, to your work as the best version of you. And that's what they deserve. They deserve the best you, not the cranky, shitty, half-assed version of you. Yeah. You know, they deserve the best you, and so do your colleagues and your family. You know, that's how we got to show up to the world, as the best version of us.
Well, and this ties into one of the other really brilliant points of the book that I thought was, you talk about busyness and the culture of being busy, and it wasn't until I read your words that I suddenly thought that has become the standard reply now when you ask how someone is. People used to say, I'm fine. Now they're like, oh, I'm busy. And it's like, you're not really leading a proper life unless you can say that. What do you think causes that, and how do you combat that? Like, because people are busy, but...
Totally. And there's 3 words that are eliminated from my vocabulary and from my family's. And one of them is busy, one of them is should, and the other one is can't. So I have a little 9-year-old stepson, and whenever he says, but I can't, and we go, da 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 da, and he's like, he rephrases it, and he's like, I'm not sure how to do this. And I'm like, that's good. But we wear busyness like a badge of honor. And we walk around and it's like, yeah, I pulled an all-nighter and I'm amazing. And for me, it's like, you are just exhausting yourself. And for me, that's not my measure of success. Being totally run off my feet where I'm exhausted and on the verge of being sick and tired and angry at everyone and want to kill the postman. And, you know, that's not how I want to live my life. And for many years, that's what was. It was, you know, when I was in the performing arts, you know, we would be recording for 10-hour days and then I'd go to a bar job just because I was obsessed with earning money and filling all of my time. So I felt important and felt needed. But I was always sick and ended up really, really sick in hospital because I didn't take any space for me. And all it takes is 5 breaths in the morning. You know, you can do that while you're sitting on the toilet. If you've got 5 kids under the age of 5, you know, whatever. You could just do it whilst you're sitting and having a cup of tea. It's all it takes. It doesn't mean you have to spend half a day, you know, meditating in lotus pose.
Yeah.
All it takes, and some days all it takes, for all I have, is 3 mindful breaths. And that's okay. And you can radically shift your entire biochemistry with just 3 deep belly breaths.
Well, I mean, one of the things I've taken away as well is just being aware of your thought processes seems to be half the battle. So like, everyone has a mean girl, yes. But the reason they have control over people is because they're not thinking of it as a mean girl. Like, they're just thinking of it as their own thoughts, which they are. But like, being aware of what your brain does seems to be like almost 95% of the battle is recognizing these thought patterns and finding ways to get out of them. Because when you're in one of those negative downward spirals, the last thing you want to hear from someone is, oh, just think positively, because yes, it seems impossible.
You just want to punch them in the face. Yeah. I do too. I just want to punch. I'm like, don't tell me that.
Yeah.
You know?
So the idea of taking all those negative thoughts and just going, why am I thinking these? And trying to sort of find a way out of them that isn't just flipping a switch and being positive out of nowhere, because you can't do that. But that's what I think this book is. That's why I think this book is so great. It just shows little simple ways, like little simple ways of thinking or of just recognizing your own thought patterns that can help you so much.
And like you said, those mean girl thoughts, people believe them to be true with a capital T, like the truth. And it's not. Like, if you distill it down, you are not a worthless piece of crap.
Yeah.
What, no matter what your mean girl tells you, or you know, and there, I've heard some awful things that people's mean girl says to them. And mine too, many years ago, was awful. And don't get me wrong, I still have a mean girl. She's just sitting in the back seat and she's on mute a majority of the time. But she does pop up, and I have the tools now to pop her back on mute very quickly. And that's what this book teaches you. It teaches you how to dial down her volume very, very quickly, instead of letting her hang out with you for a couple of months, sometimes even years. Yeah. I've had women come to me and go, my mean girl has run the show for 45 years.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of unlearning we've got to do, and reprogramming. And my mean girl was on volume 10 with a very heavy bass for many, many years. And now she just, a majority of the time, she hangs out on mute. But yeah, I'm definitely not enlightened. I'm not proclaiming to be enlightened. I do still have a mean girl. She'll pop up occasionally, but I have the tools to quickly put her back on mute.
Can you remember the last time she showed up,
for example? Oh yeah, yesterday.
What was she
Absolutely.
Saying?
Absolutely. So yesterday we had the book launch for my book, and the night before I didn't really sleep well. I was actually dreaming that my beautiful PA, Sam, didn't put the juices on the table. And I was like, Sam, you've got to put the juices on the table. That was my dream. But I woke up in the morning and she was telling me that my speech is going to be crap and everyone's going to laugh at me and you're not going to get your words out and all sorts of different things. And I stopped and I meditated, actually, because I knew I needed to take a couple of deep breaths. And I just got really deep in my heart. I sunk back into my heart, which is where our truth is, which is where you will always find the answers, is in your heart, not in your head, unless you're doing like a mathematical equation. But for most things, you know, if you slide back down into your heart, that's where you'll find the answers. Your heart always knows the truth, always. So I just slid back down to my heart. I took a few deep breaths. And I was just like, thanks, mean girl. And I gently closed the door on her. I just said, thanks, mean girl. I'm going to close the door on you and I'm going to go slide back into my heart and go enjoy my launch breakfast.
And that's like a key thing in this book, is the recognizing that she's not going to go away. You're never going to reach some amazing zen-like state where you never have fears or worries, because it's impossible. It's like what you said about perfection. It's just perfection is tied to fear, and it's not a real thing.
Yeah.
But this book is just, it's full of warmth, it's friendly, it's accessible, it's like everything that I didn't think a self-help book was. So thank you so much for writing it. And Lisa, thank you so much for coming in today. It's been a pleasure to meet you. And everyone out there, you can buy Mastering Your Mean Girl at Booktopia.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.